related and not related, as we'll see, to this past week's parsha. And it's the topic of feeding your animals before you feed yourself, which relates to the larger notion of how we treat animals, and it's a topic worth pondering. The Gemara tells us in two places, one in Maseches Gittin and one in Maseches Brachos, that there's a prohibition, the Gemara phrases it that way, that it's usur for a person to eat until he feeds his animals first. And the Gemara derives this from the pasuk in Kriyat Shema, where we're told God says, "Nasati Esav l'sadach l'anzecha," that He will give grass to eat for our fields and for our animals. And only after that we're told, "V'achalta v'savata," and then you shall eat and you shall be satisfied. So the Gemara says, you see the order of things, first the animals eat, then the humans eat. And the Gemara tells us in the context of Maseches Brachos that that has the ramification there for the laws of Brachos, that even though normally we don't allow you to talk after you make a bracha, you can't be mafsik between a bracha and the food. However, if the reason you're doing it is because it's related to the eating, so then it's sometimes permissible. And in that context, the Gemara says, if you say certain things that impact your ability to eat, that's not considered to be a hafsik, including if you say to somebody, "Feed my animals." And the Gemara explains why that is by quoting this line there as well, that it's forbidden for you to eat until you feed your animals first. So I can't eat if I haven't taken care of this, so therefore that becomes directly relevant to my bracha. There's a slight girsa change we'll talk about in a minute. I don't know if it's a girsa change. The difference between the two Gemaras, that in one place it says Aser Lachol, and the other place says Aser Litom. So we'll talk about it in a minute whether that makes a difference or not, but just for the sake of accuracy right now, so in the two Gemaras it has a slight change in language in terms of how it's presented. So this din, is this a din min haTorah? Is this a din derabbanan? It's not clear. There are those who assume that this is a din min haTorah. The Magen Avraham seems to take that position, a few others as well. If you want to say it's a din min haTorah, there's a couple ways to say it. You could say it because the Gemara connects it to a pasuk. It seems to be enough reason. That's the usual way to start. Also, one could put this in the general rubric of Tzar Bali Chaim. Tzar Bali Chaim itself requires a little bit of a discussion. Maybe a future date we'll go into it in a little bit more detail. Tzar Bali Chaim, the Gemara talks about whether that's min haTorah or midrabbanan. Let's assume that Tzar Bali Chaim is min haTorah. We still have to figure out, how do we know that? Where do we see in the Torah that there's a concept of Tzar Bali Chaim? So it seems to be there are a couple of candidates. Different dinim may reflect the fact that there is a din min haTorah of Tzar Bali Chaim. So in theory, one could subsume this halacha within that concept. You have to figure that out a little bit if that's really the case. It's not necessarily true that there's a direct line from Tzar Bali Chaim to here, because even if we assume that there's an Isser min haTorah, let's say, to be mitzar animals, so it's not clear that this is called being mitzar an animal. It's not clear that in general that passive neglect would be in the category of tzar, maybe yes, maybe no. Even if we say that it is, it's also not clear that this is actually neglect. This is a specific detail that we find. So we don't have to say necessarily that even if tzar bala chayim is deraisa, this din is automatically deraisa, but there may be a connection. Some point out that, very broadly speaking, we have a mitzvah min haTorah, we have many iterations of that mitzvah min haTorah in Sefer Dvarim, of the mitzvah of Halachta B'Drachav, we talk about often. And one of the aspects, some point out, of Halachta B'Drachav is we're told about a Kodesh Baruch Hu V'Rachamav Al Kol Masav, that he expresses his compassion to all of his creations, including the animals. So therefore, when we show concern for the animals, so that's a fulfillment also of the mitzvah of Halachta B'Drachav. So you have a couple of paths to take if you want to say this is a mitzvah d'oraisa. At the same time, there are many of the later Achronim who thought it's a din d'rabbanan. That the fact that Gemara quotes a pasuk could be an asmachta, doesn't necessarily have to mean it's actually the pasuk's intent. So there's a strong Achronic view that this is a din d'rabbanan. And then you have the Rambam, perhaps the Meiri also. The Rambam has a language in Hilchos Avadim where it sounds like it's Midas Chasidus. He says this is what decent people do. They take care of their Avadim, they take care of their animals, they feed them before they eat. So the Rambam's phrasing makes it sound a little bit like it's not even a din. It's like a Midas Chasidus, which is difficult because the Gemara phrases it much more authoritatively. So the Avnei Ezel talks about this, other Sfarim talk about this, why the Rambam seems to deviate from the way the Gemara presents it. And that's something you have to figure out. But it leaves us with a whole range of options, whether this is a real din min haTorah, a din deRabbanan, or a midas chasidus. Any way you look at it, it seems to be something that is certainly to be taken seriously, and it's most likely, except for the Rambam's language, at least some kind of a din deRabbanan or a din deRaisa. It's hard to say it's not a real din based on the way the Gemara is presented and the way everyone else discusses it. It seems to be a real halacha, either deRabbanan or deRaisa. Some want to prove that it sounds like the Rambam quotes from the Kolbo that this din that you can, it's not a hefsek if you ask to give your animals food in between the bracha. So some hold that that's, the Rambam quotes this view that that's b'di'evit, that you're not supposed to do this, but that if you do that, so then it's not a hefsek. So some want to bring a raya from there, that's probably the Rabbanan, because if it was really Minat Torah, then we should probably say that that should override the bracha, that that's more important than the bracha. So the idea that it's only b'di'evit, maybe that's a support to those who want to say it's the Rabbanan.
Why is that a support?
Because if it was a din d'oraisa, so then the bracha itself is the Rabbanan, so presumably it would take more priority to take care of this din. So the notion that really we wouldn't tell you to do this, but it's just if you do interrupt this way, it's not called a hefsek after the fact, maybe that's reflective of it being...
Why would we ever want you to purposely make a hefsek?
Well, because let's say you already made the bracha. Right. You know, no one said you should first make the bracha and then give this instruction. But you already made the bracha. So now you realize you haven't taken care of your animals, so you issue the order to take care of the animals. So it sounds like from the language of some of the poskim that it's not that you should do that. It's that if you do that, then it's not considered to be a hafzik. So if it was a din min haTorah, you would have to do that. Presumably, unless there's another way around it, which we'll come back to maybe. But that's how some want to suggest that maybe you see a proof from there.
Is it possible that goes beyond the confines of the din itself? Meaning, it could be a little bit extreme to say that for a hefsek, you should feed your animals first. Meaning that it could be possible to say that the din isn't. That's like a minute or two of a difference, but maybe the din was coming in if. You don't mind for yourself to not eat, so therefore you're not going to feed your animals because maybe you would only feed your animals, b'shas your achila also.
So it has to do with how much of an interruption is it going to be, and how much of an eating are we worried about. So that's going to come out in some of what we're going to look at. I think it's relevant to some of the next points. For example, there are those who raise the position, like the Taz, for example, that maybe this concept doesn't apply if you're just tasting. That if you don't want to have a full meal, you just want to taste something, maybe that's permissible before you feed your animals. So first off, it's a little bit difficult because, as we mentioned, one of the Gemaras uses the language aser lito. So it sounds like it's a direct steer to that Gemara. So one could say that maybe the fact that there are two different texts means already there's a girsa question, so maybe one is right and one is wrong. Or one could say, as some later Svarim suggest, that maybe there's different types of ti'ima. Ti'ima means different things in different contexts. So if we mean ti'ima, sometimes the Gemara directly contrasts them. For example, the sugya in Brachos, which talks about ti'ima and atinus, is a certain type of eating, or which is not called eating, but putting something in your mouth, which may not necessarily be prohibited in atinus yachid, for example. So there is a whole, if that's what we're talking about tasting something, if you want to test some food you don't really want to eat, so then maybe that is what he means when he says it's mutter. But if we're talking about having your whole meal, and you're saying, well, let me just taste my meal, let me just start and have the first bite first, and then I'll go feed the animals, so maybe that's what we mean you shouldn't do. So the ti'ima that would be mutter, according to the Taz, would be something that's confined to being a real ti'ima, while the ti'ima that the Gemara says is aser means to even start your meal when it's part of actually starting your meal. Nonetheless, there are many poskim who don't agree with the Taz because of this or because of other reasons, don't feel that there should be a distinction. So that's up for grabs a little bit, whether that's true or not, whether there should be any difference between just tasting food and actually eating food. Nonetheless, there is another opinion, which the Magen Avraham quotes from the Sefer Chasidim, that maybe we should distinguish between eating and drinking. That maybe we should say that even if we don't allow you to eat, we do allow you to drink. How does he know this? So this will be a topic in the Parsha a few weeks from now, in Parsha's Chayisara, because we find that in the famous test, good topic for midterms, so Eliezer is testing Rivka, and he is given water by her, and then only afterwards does she show how wonderful she is by also feeding the camels. But maybe if she was really wonderful, she'd feed the camels first. What happens to this din? So says the Sefer Chassidim that the Magen Avraham quotes, that no, she's right, she'll be our Rebbe here, and teach us that when it comes to drinking, we don't have this din. Now, you could argue with this, and you could say that for any number of reasons, some of which we'll discuss in a minute, maybe this pasuk is not a great proof text. Sorry?
It's Lachis Nafsha. Somebody's coming from the...
So that's, if I understand you correctly, it's what the Or HaChaim, the book of the Or HaChaim over there, so the Or HaChaim says that she thought that Eliezer was going to collapse, and he presented that impression himself, that she thought that there was a sakana already. So if a human being is in danger, so then for sure the human being is going to be fed first. There's no question if it's a danger situation, he takes priority. So if that's the case, so then perhaps this whole text is atypical, it doesn't really reflect on anything here. So that's how some point out. But nonetheless, there is a whole debate about this, whether the Magen Avraham is right or not. And many did accept this distinction. A lot of the later Sfarim do take this as a given based on the Magen Avraham, and others argue. Rav C. Pesach Frank has in one of his tshuvas, based on this, he considers why should it be that we should distinguish. Let's assume that it's true that we distinguish between drinking and eating. So why should that be? So he considers a couple of possibilities in light of what the whole issur is about. He says, if you believe, for example, that this is an act of tsar, that you are causing the animal to suffer by delaying his eating, so then maybe that's only true by eating. But maybe the drinking already is not such a painful thing for him to wait a little bit for the drinking. That's one perspective he offers. Another perspective that he offers is that maybe if the issue is that we're afraid you're going to forget, so then maybe drinking is not such a problem for that. We find this in other areas of halacha. We know that there is an inyan usually not to eat when you have a mitzvah in front of you. Tekiyah shofar, lulav, davening, something like that. And very often, even if we prohibit eating, we're more makel when it comes to drinking. We don't feel that drinking poses so much of a danger in terms of us forgetting to do the mitzvah. The details will vary, but in theory it's not so uncommon to find a distinction between eating and drinking on that front. So it makes sense maybe here also that maybe when it comes to eating, so then we're worried you're going to forget. But when it comes to drinking, maybe not so much.
Why is it that we feel that way? Is that just Messias?
Yeah, I think it's a practical concern that the drinking just doesn't have the same level of kvias. It doesn't. It's not like you're going to sit down to have some water and then you're going to forget about the world. Now, if you're drinking the alcohol, it's a different story. But if you're drinking, if you have a little bit of water, then especially if you're about to collapse, but even if you're not, if you have a little bit of water, so that's not necessarily going to take you out of everything else you're doing. But you're going to sit down to a meal, that's already a production, and then maybe you're in danger of getting off track. Did you?
No problem.
No problem. So there is another approach also. The Ksav Sofer in his Chuvis points out another reason why maybe the Rivka text is not a great text to use. Because who is this obligation on? This obligation, and we'll talk more about this, but at least for this stage, the obligation is on Eliezer. If Rivka is providing water, so it's nice enough already that she's giving water to somebody else. That's why we're so impressed with her. But it's not her obligation to also feed the other person's animals first. Not her obligation to feed the other person's animals at all. And again, that's why we're so impressed with it. But feed it first, for sure, shouldn't be her obligation. So that's half of a sentence that he says. So that explains the first half. Why did she give the water first to Eliezer? Because she doesn't have responsibility towards the animals. It's not her problem. Now, you could still say, okay, but it's Eliezer's problem, so why should Eliezer drink first? He should say, thank you very much, but I'll give this first to my camel, and then I'll take for myself. So that the second part of what the Ksav Sofer says is that it's not a problem if you are giving food to somebody else, you don't have to worry about their animals first. And also, if somebody else is giving you food, so then you are dependent on them, you don't have a responsibility to give that food first to the animals. When you're sitting down to your own food, you have this responsibility, but you're accepting a gift from somebody else of food, you don't have the same achrayus to give first and give up first.
I don't know how true this is, but it's also partially insulting if a person comes from the dach and you give them before you give the animals.
Okay, could be. So you want to say that it's the lack of covet for the person who's giving
covet.
That could be, and it could be that's part of what he's getting at. That You can hear why you might think it's a little insulting. It's logical. Hi.
Maybe this idea that is parallel with the second understanding of the stuff, that it's an issue that you're going to forget, because when someone else gives you something, that's not going to... It's like when you're making your own meal, you're going to get all carried away, as opposed to the first answer, which is the other thing, which... So someone giving it to you, why does it make a difference in terms of desire for the animal?
You know, I maybe would have said the opposite way, because, and we'll get into this idea a little bit more, that as far as tsar for the animal, so tsar for the animal really comes not because you're eating. It comes because he has an eating time, and its eating time might get neglected because you're eating. So therefore, maybe for that side, I would have said maybe the inverse, that for that possibility, so some extra food that you're being provided as a gift from somebody else, so that's not part of the normal eating schedule. So there's no reason why the animal has to care about that. The animal's not the... Children get very jealous. How come that? How come you have kids? You'll see how come the sibling gets before that sibling. But the animals tend not to talk that way. So the animal's not going to say, "How come he got a candy and I didn't get a candy?" But when it comes to the issue of getting distracted, so I don't know, if somebody were to come to me and say, "Here's a big steak," that could be pretty distracting. So I could maybe see it the opposite way. But it's an interesting suggestion. So perhaps also related to that. So there is a suffix that the Ksav Sofer has in his tshuva, which he doesn't have a conclusive position on. Then maybe we should say that this whole idea, this whole prohibition, that applies when the eating is essentially an achilas rishos. When you have an option to eat, then you have this prohibition. But if it's, let's say, Shabbos or Yontif, where you have a mitzvah to eat, so then maybe your mitzvah can come before the animals. So that's what he leaves open. I don't get the sense that this was accepted by a lot of other poskim. Some point out that it sounds like from the Tiferes Yisrael in his commentary to Shabbos that he's assuming this then applies on Shabbos as well, even though there's wiggle room in if he really means that or not, but it's questionable whether or not this distinction would be accepted. I could hear someone saying the opposite. I could hear someone saying that, again, if we go to the idea that we're afraid you're going to forget about feeding them, so then, normally, we're more machmir when the meal that you are eating is not stama meal, but it's a big meal. If it's a meal that has a status to it, so then we tend to be more machmir, which is why, for example, at the weddings, or you were at the Reitz dinner last night, so you see that when you're at a fancy meal, so people are more machmir to have a minyan organized at the very beginning of the zman, even if all year round, if they don't necessarily wait for the minyan in order to eat first. If it's a Suda Gedola, if it's a Suda that has its own status to it, so we tend to be more Machmer. So too, in the Shabbos Yontif, the meals are a bigger deal, so one could argue really the other way around, and maybe we should be more Machmer on this thing. So it's not so clear that this suffix was necessarily concluded in that direction, that anyone necessarily accepted this. It seems to be somewhat of an open question. I'm not aware of anyone Lamaisa saying that this is true. There is some discussion about what type of animals this applies to. So first of all, Ritzi Pesach in his tshuva, where we mentioned before, so he raises the question of do we distinguish between kosher animals and non-kosher animals. So it's hard to see why we should, and he doesn't conclude that we do. And again, if we go back to the Sefer Hasidim, if we want to bring a proof from the camels, so then that would seem to indicate that this then doesn't have anything to do with kosher animals and not kosher animals. And I think that's also pretty much the consensus, that the kashrus of the animal doesn't really come into the discussion. Nonetheless, there could be some distinctions. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his Shuvas and his Shailus Yaveis, so he raises the question that maybe we should try to figure out whether this should properly be applied to cats and dogs. So why should we not apply it to cats and dogs? He says maybe it should just be the farm animals, something like that, but not necessarily the cats and dogs that you have in the house. Not that he was such a fan of having dogs in the first place, which is a separate discussion, but if you have cats and dogs, so then maybe this din shouldn't apply. So why not? So he discusses various svaras, why you might distinguish. So one svara that he has, each discussion here, you see people throwing in more reasons why this din comes up in the first place. So he says, maybe the whole idea is that the animals, let's say the farm animals, they serve you. So therefore, hakar satov, you should feed them first. But the dogs and the cats, maybe they don't play that role. Maybe they do. Maybe the cats get rid of the mice, and the dog gets your newspaper, and does tricks for you, entertains you, I don't know, does something. So he discusses that. Maybe they do something. He goes back and forth about this, and maybe there is a svar first to distinguish. Maybe that svar is not so solid. Then he also throws in something else. says that when it comes to the cat and the dog, say the cat for example, so if you don't feed the cat, he's going to find something to eat. He knows how to get around, he knows how to take care of himself, so he'd rather you feed him, but if you don't, he's not going to die. But the farm animals that are up there locked in the barn and they're waiting for you to bring their food, so if you don't bring them their food, they're really going to suffer. So maybe it's from the Tzar Bali Chaim angle, maybe there's more of a concern for the farm animals than for the cats and dogs, but again, that's also a little bit of a vague kind of distinction, and it probably doesn't really play a role so much. Hi.
To the second one, could you add maybe because the cats and the dogs are found inside the house, that you're not going to forget about it, but a farm animal outside
that could
maybe,
be.
You know,
he may actually
a bird or whatever.
Right, he may actually say something like that. And there are some who say, I saw in one recent sefer that seems to take it as davar pashut for some reason, that when it comes to birds and fish, you don't find the kapeda here. That it's, they, for some reason, are off the screen here. I'm not 100% sure why. Maybe it's like you're saying, maybe they're right there in front of you and you're not likely to forget. I don't know, it could be. It could be that maybe the barn has more of a out-of-sight, out-of-mind kind of concern. I don't remember if Yakubim particularly brings that up, but it's a possibility. Hi.
If we go back to the reasons that we said before, else like Tzar Bali Chaim, for example, so it could be a stray cat or dog. I mean, that discussion would apply. It doesn't necessarily have to be your own cat or dog. Or I'm saying.
Oh, so that's another good question. So which animals does this apply to besides talking about species, but which specific animals? So presumably, the way that Chassam Sofer and others assume is that this is a reference to animals that are under your responsibility. It's your job to take care of them, even if you don't own them. So then you have this halacha applies. There is a position of the Mariel Diskin, and we'll talk in a few minutes about what prompted it. It's hard to understand that he assumes that it's dependent on ownership, and not just ownership, but absolute ownership. You have to have a kinyan haguf in the animals in order to be subject to this halacha. But I think most assume, like the Chassam Sofer, that assuming that it's your responsibility, so then you have this halacha as well. And if you own it, but you're not in charge of taking care of it, so presumably you're responsible for making sure somebody is. That's you can probably outsource the job, but you have to presumably make sure that it's happening. Some point out that the whole Gemara that we mentioned about the Hefsek Bracha, so the whole context is what happens in Milya Bracha, you say to somebody, feed my animal. So why don't you feed the animal yourself? So apparently there you see that we're talking about bringing about the feeding of the animal more than necessarily the you're feeding it yourself. So is the person who is responsible for feeding it is the one who has this halacha, and if you're the owner, you would have to make sure that it's actually happening, at least in the broader sense. There is a suffix that if you look in the Sefer Mesader Shitos V'Chilukim, it's written by the father of the Debrechin Rav, who's also the father of the Betel HaChachma, because they happen to be brothers. So the father of both of those poskim, he has a sefer called Masada Shitos V'Chilukim. So there he also has an open question, which again he doesn't answer. There's a lot of sfeikus in this area, of a lot of open questions. But one of the questions that he poses is, let's say you have a situation where you don't have the animal food right now, you only have human food. So you have to wait for the animal food to be brought to you, but you want to eat the human food. So are we going to say to you that you have to give the human food to the animal, which is not normally the way things are done? It may indeed be a problem of Baal Tashchis for you to do that. So is that the appropriate path, that in order to avoid this issue, you have to feed the human food to the animal? Or should we say, no, if that's the situation, you'd be exempt from this? So he leaves that as an open question. So it could be relevant. There is an assumption that many have. The Paris Yosef in Parshas Chayisara quotes this brings this down as a davar pashut. He thinks this is obvious, that this whole halacha presumably only applies during whatever the set times are for the animal to eat. So if the animal eats at these times, you should eat first. But if it's not a time for the animal to eat, so then it's probably not a problem for you to eat. It's hard to imagine that every time you decide to eat, now you have to force feed your animal also. The animal can only eat so many times, only eats at a certain schedule. So presumably this din doesn't mean that you have to force him to eat whenever you want to eat. It means that at the times when he's eating, so then it's not right for you to eat first. So maybe this doesn't directly address that suffix, but maybe if you don't have the animal's food yet, so it's probably because it's not its time yet. So to say that just you have to give up your food because you want to eat it, maybe that's a situation maybe is a little bit less likely to come up, perhaps. So maybe just to close off, so we keep it a little bit brief tonight. That not so brief, somewhat brief. I mentioned a little cryptically at the beginning. I said that this is a topic from last week's parsha, and it's also not a topic from last week's parsha. Why is it not a topic from last week's parsha? It's rare that we start saying this is a non-parsha, because there are those who point out, the Chassam Sofer and Reb Leibish Charif and others, that it seems from the Psukim in Parshas Noach that Noach did not fulfill this din. Because in the context of the food that was provided, so the Pasuk says something like V'haya l'cha v'lahem l'achla, that the food will be for you and for the animals to consume. So it sounds like Noach was not feeding them first, he was eating first. So the Chassam Sofer and the Reb Leibish Charif and others, Reb Leibish Charif is married since. If you go to the Beis HaKfaris in Warsaw, you can see his kever there. He was the one who wrote a will. He said that he wrote a lot of Sfarim in his lifetime and he didn't have the funds to publish them. So he gave a tzava. He said that after I pass away, or any time, all these manuscripts around, anybody who wants a refuah shleima, if they publish my Sfarim, I'll be mispalel for them. So people have taken on that practice. A lot of people feel it's a skula to bring to print the Sfarim of Reb Leibish Charif. So he also raises this question that why is it that Noach seems to have neglected this halacha? So there are a lot of approaches, many approaches to this question. And again, some of these approaches also shed light on different aspects of the prohibition. So some say maybe Noach was wrong, that the Medrash Tanchuma has a comment that Rashiv Karim Yavna has a beautiful drush about this in Parshas Noach, that Chazal tell us that when Shem, who's later known as Malki Tzedek, meets up with his descendant Avram, and Avram says to him, how did you and your family have the zchus to leave the teva? Which is, as she discussed, is a funny language. I mean, we'll leave the teva. How'd you get the teva in the first place? How'd you get saved? So the emphasis is, what was the zchus that you left the teva, that all of society is started by your family? Well, what zchus do you have? So he says that tztaka that we did during that year that we were in the teva, the tztaka and chesed we engaged in, that's what made us worthy. So Avram says, Staka, Chesed, you had people there? You had poor people on the boat that you were taking care of? There were Aniyim? What do you mean, Staka and Chesed? He says, no, we were taking care of the animals. And that taking care of the animals, that trained us in this Midas HaChesed, and that's why we were worthy to start off society. And Avram was inspired, and we all know what happened to Avram. We all know how he took up this mission. So in this context, Hashem says, kind of out of nowhere, oh, you should just know that how difficult it was that my father, one time he was late and the lion went after him and he was very badly damaged because of the way the lion reacted. So some suggest that maybe the idea is that this was an onus for Noah. Maybe he wasn't always on top of it the way he should have been. So some bring this up in this context. But there are other creative suggestions as to what was exempting Noah from this, and they draw on some different explanations. For example, some suggest, if you look at this context in Kriyat Shema, that we have the whole din, that's the source here, so it sounds like that what's happening, so we are not always worthy of being sustained on our own. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that at those times, so he'll sustain us on the zchus that we're providing food for our animals. So because we have to feed our animals, that's why we get any nourishment at all, and we're lucky we're able to stay alive through that. So maybe it's a Musar Haskel that we should feed our animals first to remind us that it's not even our own zchus that's keeping us alive, it's the zchus that we're taking care of the animals that also sustains us. So that's true nowadays, but in the days of Noah, really the opposite was true. That really the whole world was going to be wiped out, and it's only Noah who had the zchus to be kept alive, and once he was being kept alive, so he has all the animals in there. So the animals are clearly being kept around because of him. Even though one could argue maybe the animals were separate from society, from humanity. But okay, let's take this this way, that Noach's chus was what was keeping anybody alive, so therefore it's the reverse of the way things are since then, so therefore maybe that's okay. I think this is based on the Yad Ephraim. The Yad Ephraim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch has a comment along these lines, others expand on it. There's another approach. I think this is the approach that Reb Leibish Charif takes. It's a little more mystical. that the whole idea here is we're talking about the elevation of all the matter of the world. So you have, let's say, the vegetation. Vegetation is exalted through the fact that it sustains the animal life. And then the animal life is exalted through the fact that it sustains and provides the nourishment for the humans. So first you raise up the vegetation by feeding it to the animals, then you raise up the animals by feeding them to the humans. But in the days of Noah, so there was not yet the heter achilas basar, they were not involved in eating meat. So therefore, according to this explanation, maybe the whole concept doesn't apply.
According to this explanation, also wouldn't be shaykh to the Ari. The Ari is not going to be eaten by a person anyway.
Unless you say it's a broad concept, that just the idea, not necessarily the specific animals it was eaten, but just the notion of plants into animals, into people, and the whole circle of life. So therefore, animals as a whole, especially. You're right, that could have been the basis. He doesn't spell it out, but that was the basis for Tzvi Pesach Frank's suffix, that maybe it should only apply to the kosher animals. Like we didn't really understand why there should be any distinction. And maybe if he wants to follow this explanation, maybe that would be the distinction. Could be. It could also be, some suggest, that the idea is the achalta v'savata. That's also the context of the pasuk. So when you're eating kedei sviya, when you have enough food to keep you happy, so then it's not right that you should have that food first. You should first feed your animal. But you have Noach in a crisis situation, a survival mode in the boat, so he's not eating kedei sviya, so maybe this whole concept doesn't apply to him. Which is a theme that you find throughout here, that this whole emphasis seems to be that it's not that animals come before people. We know people are more important than animals. But when people are benachas, when they're eating bekvias, so then it's part of that kvias is that you should first attend to the animals and then get to your kvias. But when the eating doesn't have this kvias, then you find differences here. And then maybe that's the thread that's run through a lot of these discussions. The idea that the Taz has that Ta'ima is not subject to this, or in the distinction between drinking, and all these different concepts, that perhaps a lot of them emphasize this idea that it's Dafka when humans are eating Derech Keva that we have this concept. There's a sefer called Avnei Chayfetz, a couple of svarim called that. There's one sefer called that, it was written by Rabbi Goldberger. So he, in the beginning of Chelek Beis, he has a whole piece about this, which I didn't really understand what he was getting at, but it's similar to this approach. That it's davka when it's bekeva that we have this idea, and when you're not eating bekeva, so then we find distinctions, and maybe that's the idea. The idea is that when you are benachas, so then you should not be benachas until you've taken care of your animals. But your basic sustenance, life and death sustenance. So obviously, we're more concerned about keeping people alive than keeping animals. But when we're beyond that, then we start talking about this idea. And a lot of us don't deal with this. Maybe we don't have farm animals. Most of us don't have farm animals. Maybe we have cats and dogs and so something. But a lot of us don't really interact with this concept. But the notion that Tzar Bala Chaim as a whole sensitizes us to the Chi of Rachmanis for all of God's creatures is an important one to come into contact with. So therefore, it's a benefit from discussing this sugya, even if we don't necessarily interact with it halacha l'maisa. It's a guide to ponder this. And that's why, again, we saw that Noach benefited from this experience that he had taking care of animals and became such a Baal Chesed. So we don't necessarily have that experience, but we have the ability to talk about sugyas like this, which also hopefully should be beneficial for that purpose. So just to quickly chazer what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we have this din in two places in Shas, at least, that there is an obligation to feed your animal before you eat or before you taste, depends what girsa, and it impacts the hefsek and brachas concept. And then we saw that there's some discussion whether it's a din minat Torah, either from its own source or as some kind of a subset of Tzar Bala Chaim or v'halachta b'drachah, something like that. Or perhaps do we say it's a Durabanan, or is there some room to say it's not even either of those? Like maybe the Rambam seems to be indicating maybe it's the Midos Rasibus. And then we discussed how there might be some distinctions in these concepts. The question of whether it applies to Ta'ima, the position of the Taz that it didn't, that other poskim disagreed with. The question of whether it applies to drinking, which the Magen Avraham quotes in the Sefer Hasidim, that it doesn't, based on the proof from Rivka. We mentioned a couple of reasons to question that proof. The Or HaChaim, for example, thought it was a Shas Sakana. We discussed Tzvi Pesach's strength analysis of why there might be a distinction, either because it doesn't cause tsar for the animals to wait, or because it's not going to cause us to forget if we're just involved in drinking. And then we talked about the idea of the Ksav Sofer, that it doesn't apply to somebody else giving food to a person with animals, which also, again, changes the proof from Rivka. And also the flip side of that, that if you're on the receiving end, you also don't have an achrayis to feed your animals first, and that's why Eliezer was also off the hook here. And we talked about the ksav sofer suffik as well, whether or not maybe this din should be suspended on Shabbos or Yantif. We discussed that maybe it was far to say the opposite thing. It's unclear that this idea has really been accepted by poskim. Then we talked about the question of which animals have this concept applying to them. We mentioned the Tzvi Pesach Frank has a suffix about whether it applies to non-kosher animals as well, but it seems to be across the board that it does. But you suggested noteworthy that maybe it's because of the word that we're trying to elevate the animals that we're going to eat. It's an interesting idea. And we discussed also the question of does it apply to cats and dogs? Should we recommend in suffix? Shmos Yaakov, by the way, assumes for sure that it does. Most seem to assume that there's no distinction here, but Yaakov did mention a couple as far as why he thought that maybe it was open for question, that maybe the dogs and the cats don't serve you the same way the barn animals, farm animals do. Maybe, again, maybe they do. And also, maybe the cat and the dog will survive without you feeding them, but the animals in the barn maybe won't. And the assumption that some have is that this halacha doesn't apply to fish and to birds and to things like that. And then in terms of which specific animals, so presumably like the chsam sofer, the animals that are upon you to take care of, Mariel Diskin had this idea that you have to own them and you have to have a kinyan aguf in them. It's a different approach. And we talked about the suffix of the Masada Shitas V'chilukim, that what happens if you only have human food, so you're waiting for the animal food to come, are you obligated to give your human food to the animals in order to not eat before them? We left that as an open question, and we discussed how that could interact with the idea that the Paras Yosef expresses the Devar Pashut, and others also agreed with, that this whole halacha really only applies when it's time for the animals to eat, that we're not assuming that every time you want to eat, you have to force feed the animals if it's not their time. The assumption is that we're talking about a context where it is a time for them to eat. And then we discussed the disconnect between this halacha and this past week's parsha, the implication that we have that Noah was not fulfilling this, that he was eating first. And we mentioned many different approaches that addressing this question that the Chassam Sofer and others bring up. On the one hand, maybe it's taka criticism against Noah, and then we find that he was attacked by a lion because of some negligence here. And other approaches which draw on some different perspectives about what this whole concept is about, either that the whole notion is to show that we are dependent on the animals for sustenance, and maybe Noach Davka was going in the other direction, that he was the one being the cause of anything being saved, or that maybe the idea is that we want to elevate the whole circle of life here, so vegetation should go to the animals before the animals go to the humans, but in the time of Noach there was no eating of meat, so the concept was not yet applicable. Or maybe because of the context of the pasuk, we achalta v'savata, so it's only achila sheyesh bo sviya, that it's only a real eating that's benachas, and Noach didn't have that type of eating, so he wasn't subject to this. And perhaps that is a theme that seems to run through here, that it's not that we really put the needs of animals before humans, that's not necessarily the correct message to take from here, but that when the animals are benachas, when the humans are benachas, when they're eating kedei sviya, so then they have to only do that in the context of having taken care of the needy creatures as well, and that all of this helps to sensitize us to the concepts of Tzar Balei Chayim, which are hopefully important to us, even if we don't get to practice them in actuality. Okay, so as to show next week, we'll talk about something else.